Test.
Yep, mine's working.
Test.
There we go. There you go.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, and if I could welcome you to a regular scheduled meeting of the City of Morro Bay Planning Commission, January 16th, 2024, at the Veterans Memorial Building. I am Chairperson William Roshan, and I'd like to introduce the commission. To my right, Vice Chair Mike Rodriguez.
Happy New Year.
To my left, Commissioner Asia King. To her left, Commissioner Joseph Ingrafia. And on the far right, Eric Meyer. We have a quorum, and I'd like to call the meeting to order. If we could begin with a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Pledge of Allegiance. Commissioners, any planning commissioner announcements?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one announcement.
Mike?
Sure, yeah, I just wanted to reiterate that the legislature did pass 60 new laws regarding housing last year that went into effect in 2024. So obviously one of them is AB 423, which applies some of these standards to coastal zones. So obviously there's going to be more pressure on Morro Bay and other small communities to develop new housing and affordable housing. So, you know, there's a lot of laws. I don't know if Scott wants to detail on some of those, but we're going to have to kind of come up to speed with those as we did, as these larger developments come forward.
Any thoughts, Scott?
I'm still going down the list of assembly bills that passed or went into effect January 1, and kind of getting a feel for what ones will impact us and what ones won't. So don't have a complete handle on it yet. There's a lot. Commissioner Rodriguez points out.
Well, we've talked about it before, reaching out to someone from the state who could maybe visit us. I know they do that on a regular basis, and see if they could give us a half-hour presentation on the new laws. Is that something we can look at?
Yeah, and the reason I brought it up, too, is because obviously this commission and the council are trying to promote the development of new housing and affordable housing. So if we could use our synergy and get together to do that work, that would be great.
I have a question for you, for staff. I was sent a letter from Cal Poly, and there's a planning, or rather architecture department, has a landscape design project going on that involves, just a hypothetical, that involves the Morro Bay waterfront and the rock and the bay and the sand spit, and I'm not certain if there's anybody from the city that's involved in that, but it seems I didn't have enough time to respond to them. I did chat with them and send them some photos, but I can't be part of the project. But it's just interesting, and I thought if someone from the city were interested in going, it would be an interesting, I think it's a 2 or 3 day thing with people from all over the country evidently showing up, staying at the hotels in San Luis, and the most brightest and best students supposedly are the ones that are working with various teachers and experts on this project, and it just seemed interesting.
I agree with the comment. Definitely interesting. The 3 day thing is the problem.
Thanks, Eric. I have one quick thing. Typically, we do the election of officers here on the commission, and we're going to do that, I think, at our next meeting. Commissioner Ingrafia is interviewing, I think.
Oh.
And so we want to wait until after his...
We don't usually do the election of officers until after the... Assuming we have seats that are up, until after the city council makes the decision.
Yeah, to his interview, yeah. If Joe's term's up.
No, the election of officers.
Oh, we elect a chair and a vice chair.
Okay, we're doing that
every time. We do it every year, yeah. Anything else, commissioners? Thank you. Public comment. This is a chance for anyone who would like to speak on any issue that's not on the agenda, or if you can't stay, you're welcome to speak now. Welcome, Mayor. I don't think it's on. So sorry. Nope, nope.
Testing.
Our apologies. Sorry.
No worries. I'll try that again. Good evening, commissioners. A lot of back feed there. Thank you for taking my comment. I just want to start the evening and the new year by thanking you all for your service last year. I enjoyed working with you. I look forward to working with you this year, and I say that because I will again be your council liaison. So I look forward to being that connection for the city council, and I'm happy to see what 2024 brings us in the project world. So thank you again for your service to the community, and I will see you as many meetings as I can make.
Thank you very much. It's really great to have you as our liaison. Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening, Commissioner, Chairman. I spoke to the city council last week about this, but I will follow up for the Planning Commission. My name is Gene Dottie. I'm an architect, engineering contractor. I've worked on the Embarcadero for almost 50 years. I've been on the Harbor Advisory Board for close to 40 years. I was a member of the original Waterfront Master Plan Committee, and there were several things that were not known at the time, and I'd kind of like to relate those to you. They would be the economics of projects, the ability to build, and the lease sites need to be considered. I would like to relate to you just how hard and expensive it is to work on the waterfront. Engineers tell us that the shoreline is one of the hardest places in the world to work on. Either the soil is rock hard or soft mud. We have both. We have just a pile of loose rocks underneath your Embarcadero, and we have to build special engineered foundations for those. A cost of up to $500,000.
So, Gene, can I just interrupt real quick?
Sure.
This is regarding the case, right?
No.
This is a separate comment.
This is a general comment.
Got it. Sorry to interrupt.
I realize you're doing something later on, but I think it's important that you guys have first-hand knowledge of this.
Great. Please continue.
So we just have a pile of rocks down below, and so we have to do special engineering foundation. And up to $500,000 is not unheard of for the foundation, which just gets buried into the ground. That's a lot of money that's just buried there. Beyond all the normal loads that we have to consider, we have to consider rising tides. We have to consider waves that are continually eroding underneath the base of our foundation. We have to worry about everything rusting or rotting. We need to have special materials to combat that. We have to consider about waves. We have to worry about the tidal forces that are coming in, going out, going up, going down. Our structures need to withstand that. We have to resist tidal waves. We have to resist ships running into them. We also have all the environmental concerns. We have one of the most rigid concerns on the environmental, and it's dynamic out there. We cannot harm, harass, or take any endangered species. We can't even create a shadow on top of them. We need approval from the city, the county, the state, and the federal government. It takes years to get a process through. All these conditions are uniform across the entire lease sites. And on the smaller lease sites, all those burdens create a more hardship for them to make a return on their investment. If everything goes right, and I've talked to several lease site owners in the last week or two, maybe 5 to 7% is all they're going to get on the return on their money. The city is bringing in between 12 to 15% from those lease sites. I can get a T-bill for 5% return safe. And so it's very hard and very expensive to improve the waterfront. I feel that those factors need to be part of the waterfront consideration. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Anyone else like to speak? Welcome.
Commissioner's Chair, I want to thank you as well for the time you've given over the past year to keeping our planning organized and on track, and you have a lot of important issues in front of you, and I want to thank you for that and look forward to 2024, more of the same. I have a quick comment about C1, and it has to do with restrooms. Those of you who have been down to the Embarcadero who tend to go down towards the south end there may be shopping and need a restroom. Some of the restrooms that are part of the properties there are oftentimes locked. They're not really accessible to the public. So my one thought about C1 is that perhaps you consider having the tenant build the restroom per city standards, but have the city maintain them like they do their other restrooms to ensure that they're actually open for people. It's a big need in the city, and particularly down at that end. So that's just a thought, and maybe there are other ways to get that done. But I think it's a lot to ask for a tenant to not only put in the restroom, but also maintain it if there's no benefit to their business, which oftentimes I think there may not be. So thank you again for your service. Have a great evening.
Thanks, Jeff. Others who would like to speak? Public comment. Is there anybody in the queue?
There are no raised hands on Zoom.
Thank you very much. If that's the case, I will close public comment. And let's go on to the consent calendar. Commissioners, comments on the consent calendar, please. Eric.
Yes, the item A2, the September 19th minutes, the same problem we had the last time we looked at these minutes, we still have, which is that some of the comments were not shown. And I chatted with staff privately about this a few seconds ago, but we just need to kick the September 19th minutes off of our approval and approve the other two, and staff will get back to us at the September 19th.
I did update the minutes. It does appear that perhaps the minutes that got attached to the staff report were the minutes from the old version, not the new version. I would suggest pulling these ones out before you make the decision.
Okay, so we're pulling out which one?
September 19th.
September 19th, which is item A2.
Got it. Any comments on November 7th? Hearing none, do I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
Motion to approve consent
Mike,
calendar.
Mike, do I have a second?
I second as long as we've confirmed that A2 has been pulled and we're only approving A1 and A3.
Is that a friendly change of the motion?
Yes.
Accepted? Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Then let's go right to new business.
Can we finish the motion and those opposed?
Oh, I'm sorry. Those opposed? I thought I heard everybody, but okay.
I just like to do it for the record.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Anybody abstaining? Thank you very much. So we're on to new business. Anything else, Scott, or can I go right to that?
I think you're good. Yeah.
Thank you. Case number CR23-010. The site location is 551 Embarcadero, and this is a conceptual review. Cindy, you're up.
Give us 1 second here so we can get it up on the screen.
There we go. evening, Planning Commission, members of the community. This is a conceptual review item for lease site 6262W, which is a city lease site located at 551 Embarcadero Road. This is just conceptual review only. No action will be taken tonight by the Planning Commission. It is for review and discussion with the applicant and their project architect. Applicant is Todd and Tamara Baston, and the architect is Gene Doughty. On the screen is an aerial overview of the lease site. This is a small, narrow lease site, 30 feet in width. It is just located south of the Gray's Inn, and it is currently the location of Morro Bay Paddle Sports. It was for years the location of Kayak Horizons, and has a existing kayak float on the water side. It is also located adjacent to the Driftwood Street end, and you can see that in the image on the screen. In the new zoning code that was just adopted and amended by the city council, it is the zoning remains. It's a waterfront zone district, and the land use is waterfront commercial industrial. It is under our previous zoning code, 1997 code. It's within the plan development overlay. The property is located in the waterfront master plan and also within the downtown waterfront strategic plan boundary areas. And those are two city documents adopted that apply development and design requirements in this area. Here's some existing images of the street, and I have some more current images. These are from Google Earth, so they're about 10 years old. The existing lease site is approximately 2,300, almost 2,400 square feet. As part of the proposed project, the applicant is requesting a lease boundary adjustment. Because the area south of the lease site is city right-of-way, the mechanism would not be to expand the lease site from 30 to 40 feet. It would likely be encroachment by Public Works, since this is public right-of-way. But for simplicity's sake, it is referred to as a lease adjustment, and semantics aside. That encroachment area would be approximately 1,125 square feet for a new total lease site of 3,494 square feet, with the goal of that would be the mechanism to meet their view corridor requirement. And I'll go through that in the presentation. Sorry for the noise. There is also a city documented historic parking credit to this lease site of 17 spaces. If you recall, the Planning Commission previously reviewed a few months back the development for the Libertine site, and that had far in excess of that number, but that is a process that the city follows on these Embarcadero lease sites, since they predate, many of them predate city incorporation. So the proposed project that the applicant has the proposed project that the applicant has put forward would involve a demolition of the existing two-story building that's there at this lease site, and proposes development of two separate buildings with a breezeway. It would be a three-room hotel with a small 425 square foot retail shop in the front building. So there would be two buildings separated by a breezeway, an east and a west building. The retail would be on the first floor of the front building. It also proposes replacing the existing kayak float, putting in a new dock gangway, two new pilings to support the harbor side work, sleeving of existing pilings, and then installing a new 10-foot wide harbor walk access. And currently there is no harbor walk access, so this would be a long sought after goal of the city to have the harbor walk connect all the way down to Driftwood. And then this lease boundary adjustment or encroachment, it would be 10 feet to the south, and then also a water lease site adjustment extending 12 feet to the south for that portion that goes outside past the street end. And the three hotel rooms would range in size from about 400 to 600 square feet. Some project details, and in the next few slides I'll show you the site plan and the images. The project is before the Planning Commission because as a conceptual review item, we are seeking feedback from the Planning Commission in relation to a few key areas. And one is related to its small, narrow lease site. As I said, the lease is, site is 30 feet wide. It's one of the smallest lease sites on the Embarcadero, which provides some development constraints to building of the site. And then also, we are seeking Planning Commission feedback on the proposed design of the development. It is seeking to extend the design of the Gray's Inn for marketing and branding of the existing Gray's Inn hotel that's there and has been there for decades. But as part of the challenges that the project faces, there are some key areas where they are requesting exceptions. And these include second floor front setback, lot coverage, and building height. And as I stated earlier, if not for the part of the project that includes a lease site adjustment, it would not meet the view corridor requirement because of the width of the proposed building. In the waterfront master plan, the base building height is 17 feet, and Planning Commission can allow up to 25 feet where there's a finding of significant public benefit. In this project, the applicant is proposing two areas of public benefit. These include a 90 square foot public gazebo, that would also serve as, you know, a way of marking the entrance to the Harbor Walk at this street end of Driftwood. It, as proposed, it would be located outside of the view corridor, although it would still be within the public right of way. And then the second public benefit item is a public restroom that would be located in the east, the street-facing building. Here's a site view from the southeast, and you can see the Gray's Inn building to the well on the right side of the image with the existing Morro Bay Paddle Sports building in the foreground, and then the Driftwood Street end there. So then these next few images I have here, I'll just show you some images of the site. This is an image that was taken today, and it just shows it from the south. The building, the smaller building on the left, is a storage building. It also predates city incorporation, potentially maybe was there in the late 60s, but the buildings are very old, and in this image you can see the kayak float. Another image that shows the width of the Driftwood Street end with the Morro Bay Yacht Club on the left. This is a site view image from the bluff top. And so when the application comes forward for its conditional use permit review, the waterfront master plan, as discussed in the staff report and then in the attachments to the staff report, does require visual impact analysis from the bluff tops. And the waterfront master plan does identify the Driftwood Street end bluff top area as one of the viewing areas that you would need to show impacts. And in this image, I think you can see the cursor on the screen, hopefully. The cursor here is pointing to the paddle sports building. So, and moving right along. So here is the proposed visual simulation for the design of the building, the existing here on the top image, and then the proposed building that shows it as the two separate buildings with the hip roofs at a 4 and 12 pitch, and that has the hardy plank siding and comp shingle roofing, which is similar to the Gray's Inn building. And so in addition, in regards to the design, the project for each of the three hotel rooms, it includes private decks for the guests. There'd be two decks on the west building. And then the center building, the second floor hotel room, is proposed in an exterior staircase that would lead up with a interior deck and access to that second floor hotel room. The retail space is shown here at this point with the window design. And then this is a visual simulation that is showing the development from the Bayside. And in this image here, you can see the proposed public gazebo, the replaced kayak float, and kayak storage business, and then along with the guest decks and then the Harbor Walk. The Harbor Walk also would provide access way with a ramp due to the steep elevation that would wrap around the gazebo. Here's an image that shows the site plan, and I've kind of highlighted some things just for purposes of viewing. In this image here, you see the east building and the west building with the center breezeway in the center, and then the exterior staircase, and then the deck that goes up to the second floor. The yellow areas that are shaded on this image represent what would count as the 30% view corridor. And so I was talking about the narrowness of the lease sites. What you can see in this image is these thick blue lines here to the left represent what the existing width of the lease site is. And so as proposed, if the city was not in support of approving a lease adjustment, they would also be non-compliant for meeting their view corridor requirement, because as a two-story development, regardless of the width of the lease, two-story developments are required to meet a 30% view corridor requirement. And so if they, part of their proposal is that 10-foot adjustment, and so the red line here shows what that would look like if a lease site boundary encroachment were approved. And so they'd have 4 feet of view corridor on the north side of the building, and the remaining view corridor requirement on the south side. The advantage of, and just some context here, the advantage of having the 4 feet view corridor on the north is that it would also serve to increase the views between the paddle sports building and Gray's Inn. The Gray's Inn building itself has non-conforming view corridors, and so by providing 4 feet there, that also, one, serves to meet their view corridor requirement, but it also lessens the impact of the views in between this building and the Gray's Inn building. So just wanted to point that out. And then the public gazebo is shown here, and as noted, it's outside the view corridor area. The applicant is proposing 10 feet of Harbor Walk access. The Planning Commission has, in the last few Embarcadero redevelopments, it has seen more than 10 feet. That's been commonplace. It's been an easy thing. I'll say easy in air quotes because I'm not designing, I'm not doing the engineering. But that's been one area that we've seen in developments where, like with the Libertine or the Harbor Walk Plaza, those were two lease sites where they proposed in excess of 10 feet to have, you know, reduced congestion, have a wider Harbor Walk access. And that was one area where they provided this, you know, significant public benefit. In this situation, the applicant is not proposing that because of potential eelgrass impact. Eelgrass habitat impacts. And so at this point, it's just proposed at 10 feet. And that's what you see in that shaded on the bottom of the image. The next couple of slides show you the floor plan. I will note that the plans here on the floor plans, it does make a comment that this area here, it says retail slash motel. Just for clarity, the reason it says that is because the first floor of that building is retail, and then the second floor is the hotel unit. And so it's just, it's saying both because it's representing both uses in that building.
We should make a clarity on that because that can easily be misread.
Right, and yeah. And when they come forward with a CUP application, that would be something that we would want that corrected, yeah. I've highlighted in blue the street parking. This is existing street parking, and that would be, proposed to be moved back to accommodate this area of view corridor. Second floor, again, hotel rooms are about 400 to 600 square feet, and you can see these two rooms here are in the 400 range. This is the public gazebo plan. The blue represents the Harbor Walk area as it slopes up from the existing Harbor Walk to the north at Gray's Inn. It connects. There's a pretty steep elevation. This lease site is about 4 feet below driftwood, and so the architect's design of the Harbor Walk ramp solution is that to extend into the street to meet the ADA accessibility requirements. It's shown on the plans as 8.3%. 8.33, but it extends and then wraps around, and then the green green shows the site plan for the gazebo. The project exceptions requested, this is included in the staff report, but this is a summary of the development standards where they are at today. And again, this is just conceptual review, so this you know, applicant is seeking the Planning Commission's feedback on what they have put forward. Second floor front setback would be, the standard requirement would be 10 feet per the waterfront master plan, and they are proposing that at about 7.5 feet. The reason is because they are trying to mimic the design of the Gray's Inn to the north. Again, the Gray's Inn to the north, though, would not meet today's waterfront master plan standards, so that is something to consider, that, you know, that is a building that predates the waterfront master plan, and that the understanding is that the master plan is adopted to carry forward, you know, new standards. Building height is the second exception. And then lot coverage is the third. Their second floor lot coverage is proposed at 77%. And per the waterfront master plan, the limit is 70% maximum for, 70% of the maximum of what's allowed on the first floor. And then again, the view corridor, their proposed solution to meet the view corridor requirement, though, is the lease boundary encroachment. Here's a screenshot from the waterfront master plan, and it outlines what those view corridors are that are required. And this addresses all development on the west side of the Embarcadero. I've highlighted the particular row that applies to this project, and I don't think I said this before, but this project proposed title is Gray's Inn 2. So Gray's Inn 2 has a 30-foot lease site width that's proposing almost 25 feet, it's a little bit under. It's less than 49 feet, and so their minimum requirement is 30%. They do meet the sloping roof requirements, and in order to get that height approved, it would require Planning Commission findings for approval of that. I spoke to this a little bit, the development constraints. This is, as I said, one of the smallest lease sites on the Embarcadero, and so there are some development constraints. The conceptual review is for Planning Commission to look at those development constraints and then consider whether the proposed public benefit is enough to offset the exceptions requested. As far as height exception goes, it does require in the waterfront master plan the specific finding that the overall viewshed characteristics would be improved or at a minimum not diminished from the public viewing location from the bluff top, as well as meeting additional requirements such as roof slope and encouraging public viewing areas of the bay. They do meet the roof slope requirement. They do meet, they are proposing some public viewing areas, both with the harbor walk and the public gazebo, should the commission favor that. And then there is the image in the presentation that showed what the bluff top looked like. Certainly when they come forward with a CUP application, they would revise their visual simulations to be consistent with that criteria. The applicant submitted a detailed project description that was attached as Exhibit A, and they are requesting flexibility on standards in the waterfront master plan because of financial feasibility. And so certainly that is what they are requesting should be part of the conversation. These next few slides, just for purposes of the Planning Commission's discussion, this shows the west elevation, and you can see here Gray's Inn to the left, and then they've drawn the existing lease line, so there would be a small encroachment of the building eaves into the lease line. Master plan says that normal eaves are allowed. It shows here that the view corridor would be maintained open. They're not proposing anything there. That's just would be sidewalk area, and then this public gazebo. And then opposing image from the east elevation, and this is, you know, showing some of the view corridor from Gray's Inn, and then a little bit wider there. In this south elevation, you can see the proposed harbor walk and the kayak float. And so as to help with the discussion on the public benefit, I previously said that there were two public benefits being proposed. As you would have saw in the staff report, they are proposing four public benefits. However, items three and four on this list would not qualify as public benefit for purposes of determining significant public benefit. And I'll skip to that. Number three is the design of the ramp solution that meets the ADA requirements. The applicant's position is that previous city approvals have kind of exacerbated the elevation differential with this lease site when Harbor Walk projects were approved to the north at a different elevation that didn't take into consideration comprehensively the waterfront. But compliance with ADA is considered a standard code requirement, and so that would not be considered extra public benefit. The number four, the requirement for low-cost visitor serving accommodations, again, that's a standard requirement in the city's LCP, and likely would be a requirement applied by the Coastal Commission. For the public gazebo, staff is asking the Planning Commission to consider whether that, you know, again, that benefit outweighs the visual impact that it creates, because although the gazebo itself is a marker for entrance to the Harbor Walk, there may be other design solutions that don't create the visual impact, but yet also denote like this is the entrance to the Harbor Walk. And then we had public comment earlier this evening from a member of the public regarding public restrooms. The proposed public restroom in the street-facing building is accessible through the breezeway, and so it would not really be in a visible location. And so we would certainly condition the project to have signage to make the restroom more visible with the future CUP approval. I prepared this slide just for purposes of your discussion. Here are some alternative options for public benefit that meets the context of the site and where it is located and maybe what fits for the site. So some of these were discussed in the staff report. They do have limited opportunities to provide that significant public benefit because of its location and its small footprint. Staff's recommendation would be there could be some potential public benefit options that kind of meet what the historical use of this area has been in terms of like the kayak business. So the first item, wider Harbor Walk access, subject to conclusions of what a future eelgrass survey might say. Number three, potentially adding electric vehicle chargers in this area, although I would note that that would conflict with circulation element policies that talk about relocating parking on the street ends of the Embarcadero. But again, just part of the conversation. Number four, upgrading the proposed public restroom to potentially including a public shower for recreational uses, people who are using the water and they're coming off the water and as a public benefit. And then this last item was not in the staff report, but I thought of this after. I've seen this in public, but as you know, one of the goals of the Downtown Waterfront Strategic Plan talks about ecotourism. So, and the potential for public charging kiosk for cell phone users or people who are out on the waterfront and they want to charge their phones. I mean, something that could be either attached to the building or freestanding and it wouldn't create a visual impact. These are just some small ideas that throwing out for the commission's discussion when you are faced with a challenging lease site. So, and I'll stop it there, but just that we're recommending to provide feedback to the applicant to address the small lease site in relation to the waterfront master plan and DWSP policies, and then the architectural design and public benefit. And thank you.
Cindy, thank you very much. Can we ask you a few questions? Commissioners, questions for staff? Joe.
Oh, you want to start?
Cindy, so as I understand it, if the applicant were to satisfy the view corridor requirement without resort to the extra land that's in the street end, it would be 30% of 30 feet. He would require a 9-foot.
That's correct.
Now, the other approach using that 45-degree angle, mm-hmm. What is that at all physically feasible, and what would that result in?
As a quarterly site, they do have that opportunity available to them to provide 45-degree angles. The waterfront master plan is silent on geometrically what extent of 45 degrees back do you need to go. But, you know, they do have some small, shallow 45-degree angles in the building now, and it's unclear on if, you know, the shallow corners that you see on the corners of the building, if, I mean, they are a 45-degree angle, but are they 45 degrees in relation to, like, the corner of the lot? And my read of the waterfront master plan is that they would have to push that angle back further in order to meet the requirement, and they're not compliant currently.
So that 45-degree angle would have to meet the southwest corner of the lot?
Southwest and southeast,
right.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. There was a suggestion in the file that the requirements for the view corridor were in some way a guideline. From my reading and from your presentation, I don't get a sense that it was a guideline, but it's a kind of a black letter regulation.
Right, yes. And the design guidelines, Chapter 5 of the Waterfront Master Plan, is part of the city's LCP. And so there's nothing in the LCP that's a guideline. Like that is the development standards. And in the new code, the project is part of the Waterfront Master Plan overlay. We call it an overlay in the new code. And those are the development standards. Now what is a guideline is a project that is proposed that doesn't meet the requirements, and what is the guideline is the Planning Commission can come up with a finding that says, based on everything in the public record and what you've proposed, we are deeming that this public benefit is significant and it's greater than normal and we'll allow it. But it doesn't mean that the standard is a guideline.
Right.
The standard
I understand it with respect. And then the last question would be, with respect to the street end, which we're considering really reducing by 10 feet in its width, are there any laws in place that in some way protect the view corridor aspects of those street ends, or is it sort of up for this kind of activity? I'm asking because I had thought that they were sort of inviolate, that you really couldn't intrude on those street ends for purposes of private buildings. But apparently I'm wrong.
They represent right-of-way that, you know, can be incorporated into the lease site through abandonment. I mean, that's the process. So they can do that, and then the city would deal with that through the lease.
Okay, but only the right-of-way aspect of the road, not the...
It's a street end, so it's all right-of-way.
All right-of-way.
Mm-hmm.
I see. So in a sense, there's no overreaching law that says we're protecting that piece of street end in perpetuity as open space. That really doesn't exist.
It doesn't say that. I mean, this proposal that's in front of you doesn't, suggest encroaching into it. They just want to use it to get more development potential, I think. And this is a difficult site, right? It's narrow. So.
Well, yes, I understand that, but I understand that they're not going to, forgive me, this isn't really a question, but I understand they're not going to build on the 10 feet, but by virtue of incorporating the 10 feet, they are released from the constraint of their own open space. So the net result is taking that area as a total, what would otherwise be open space is removed as open space.
Correct, which is, you know, I mean, this is, conceptual review, and these are all things up for debate and discussion.
No, it's the clarity, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's correct, though, Commissioner.
Okay, that concludes my questions.
Got it. Eric?
Primarily, I think, well, we won't, oh, never mind. I'll get to that later. The question for you guys, is there any history of lease site connection, if that's the right word, where multiple sites have been fused together on the waterfront? Do we do that in the city? I don't know about this.
So I believe the Marina Square, which was approved in the mid-90s, is the only area on the waterfront where the lease sites were merged. Mr. Dowdy, who's worked on the waterfront for decades. He probably could correct me, and he's probably has the answer in his head right now. But I believe that was the only time when we've merged lease sites.
Was that ever a discussion with the applicant on this project?
So when I believe when Gray's Inn went through its permitting for a refresh of that lease site, and it was like 2017, there was some discussion because the then Kayak Horizons lease site was coming up for renewal, and I believe there was not interest in merging the lease sites, but I don't know how serious that idea
is. That not interest on the city's side or on the applicant's side, or
we suggested they look at it. In fact, because we thought there might be some benefit there. One of the issues that comes from it, though, is the view corridor requirement and the fact that the existing Gray's Inn site doesn't meet their view corridor requirements. So it really would end up being a penalty and not something that would benefit the project. So that was sort of the determination they came to. I understood the argument that they made. At the time, they were represented by Kathy Novak, and she kind of did did the math on it, and like, there's no benefit here. This is going to hurt us. And so that's the last conversation I think we had. Certainly Gene could probably speak to it, but that was my recollection as well,
and
what Cindy's was.
And the other thing, too, is contextually, this was 2017, 2016, 17, 18, which is around the time when we had the draft of Plan Morro Bay out, and circulation element policy states that we would relocate parking off of the street ends because of the desire that the city wanted to have pedestrian connections and pedestrian orientation. And we didn't want like cars driving down the Embarcadero, trying to turn in the street end, finding out that all the streets are blocked or parking lot spaces are blocked, and then turning around and it's kind of creating this congestion. So it's like, if the west side of the Embarcadero is reserved for, businesses and people, and we put cars elsewhere, like that was the context of the city. And so at that time, the thought was Kayak Horizons, when that comes up for a future renewal, that will be a really difficult site to develop. So how are we going to do that? Well, one way that we can do it is the Driftwood Street end would be one of these street ends that would have in the future parking relocated away from it, but it's also an extra wide street end. So they could redevelop the Kayak Horizon streetlight, potentially get support from the city for widening that lease site. There would still be room on the yacht club side until such time as there's, some grand, plaza idea. But in the short term, this kind of, solves a problem. And so that was like the thinking, and that's kind of the assumption that they've been working with, is that potentially they could make the lease site a little bit wider, not impact parking too much in the short term, and that's where we are today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Eric, thanks. Aisha.
I'm wondering if you can, staff can talk to me about the floating dock and how that interacts with the lease site.
So the lease site's also a water lease site, and so that's part of the proposed it's a land and a water lease, and it's part of that proposed area. The Morro Bay Paddle Sports currently has their business office in the building. If when the site's redeveloped, they would move the business and they would run their business operations from the kayak launch float with the kiosk that's there. And then the dock and gangway would be that access down to the launch.
And is that public access down there, or is it just business access?
I don't think that's been fully fleshed out. Typically, when we've seen like floating docks, even if they're like a private like side tie or slip, the head float or the main dock area, that's assigned for public access, but not necessarily the actual slip. And so in this case, I could imagine it would be the same way for the dock, but that would lead you to where the business is operated from.
Right. I'm asking because I'm wondering how much this idea of public benefits might extend into this dock area. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like it's traditionally at least just business activity.
Right, yeah. And the launch float itself would probably not be a feasible area to have just, random non-customers just because of the business operations and moving, you know, people getting on and off the kayaks and, you know, launching and then the discussion. So that might.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was like a public, you guys will have to educate me, but a public fishing area on this side of the Embarcadero.
I think probably the architect can speak to that. I don't think that there is any public fishing in this area. There is some existing boat slips just immediately to the south of where the kayak float is. I don't think that any fishing is done off of these.
There's the area between, there's the little park that's between Estero Inn and Associated Pacific. That area, I've seen people fish over there before.
Oh, okay.
There's the little city dock that's down at the bottom there. I've seen them fish off of that as well.
Okay.
So that's literally just, you know, a few lease sites down from there.
Okay, thank you for the
question. Asia, thank you. Mike.
I guess it benefits us when we've just dealt with another project that's on the waterfront and with Libertine. So I'm not comparing the two projects, but I'm kind of driving for the same things when it comes to public benefits. But, and I'd like to reiterate that a planned development overlay zone allows us to make certain things happen where they wouldn't under normal circumstances, right? We could make a finding under the planned development overlay
right.
that we wouldn't make usually with a standard project.
And we in the new code, the planned development overlay chapter was removed, so we we would do it through the waterfront master plan and the modifications chapter. Same thing, different vocabulary.
Okay, good. So I just want to reiterate that that we can use that as a mechanism to get to where we need to get to.
Yeah.
I think one of the areas that interests me would be the harbor walk, potentially, and if we do get that eelgrass study, that we could expand that harbor walk access. And in fact, I was there today for 45 minutes, and I ran into Sean Green, and we spent 45 minutes today looking at how the whole harbor walk has developed over time. He created this beautiful map that shows every project and how the harbor walk has developed over time. That was in our packet, and I believe it's part of our, I don't know if you could pull up that map, Sandy, because I think it benefits us to see how we're trying to continue to go with where we started and where we're going to, because I think this is another opportunity to continue to expand our harbor walk, and I'd like to make it wider if possible. That would create another public benefit that, right, that doesn't exist with 10 feet. So we could get to the point where we need to get to with that. But I don't know if you have that map or not. Yeah, it was in Sean's email, so I don't know if you could just pull it up for our benefit just to look at it.
Okay.
We can do it later.
Yeah.
Okay. So and then the other thing would be that an idea that was brought up was the gazebo. If we could possibly remove the gazebo and create a better visual, you know, because I was out there and I kind of looked at the gazebo, you know, sitting there, and I said, yeah, it does block the view. And what is it really providing as far as public benefit other than being a gazebo in a public space?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking we could potentially do something better to create a public benefit there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, number three, the public restroom. So again, it was brought up that maybe we could expand the use of that for showers possibly to create another public benefit. So I'm just trying to get to the point where we can make a finding of and make an exception for public benefits for a project that, and by the way, it's very unusual. You know, the 30-foot, I mean, it's going to be hard to do anything there, but I think if we can make these things happen, it's going to be easier for us to make that finding.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
Let's see, Cindy, a couple of quick questions. This is or would become the beginning of the Harbor Walk. Is that right?
Yes, until such time as the other lease sites to the south redevelop and we get Harbor Walk there.
Right, and that was the encouragement around the gazebo, right?
Yes.
Okay. Additional benefits, on this is also along a parking lot that per the parking plan, per the general plan, we're looking at in terms of would this ever become a plaza. And we have had other projects where they have contributed money to the eventual plaza making. Was that considered as a possible public benefit?
I think that's something that's on the table there. Wasn't able to get the numbers we talked about before for the other sites. I apologize. Kind of got hung up in other things happening at
And I think there's a couple of steps to that because the city hasn't been specific about what it might even look like. But I do think this is an important project that sits right on that edge. So being aware of that and considering it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's something that could be incorporated, assuming that's something that's, you know, of interest to the Planning Commission and City Council, that could be incorporated into the lease for the sites.
So exactly.
Meaning they're, you put the triggers in there when they'd have to pay it and that type of thing. So.
And I just want to get a little clarity. If they were to do the view corridor as required for this size site, it would cut into the buildings by how many feet? I know, I think Joe asked this. Is it 6 feet they would lose?
9 feet.
9 feet. And then my second question.
Hold on just a second. Let's answer the question and make sure we understand what you're saying.
Please.
So if we went back to the.
So the building itself is, I believe it's 26 feet wide. Because it's, you know, 4 feet from right. from the north setback.
Right.
They are required to have 9 feet, so they'd only have 21 feet for building if they complied with the view corridor. So that would
they already have 4 feet.
They already have 4 on the north
so
side.
It would cut into it, I was thinking.
By 5 feet.
5 feet.
It'd be 5 feet less wide.
Right. Yeah. Which is substantial. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then was the plan ever done of what it looks like if they would comply with the second floor lot coverage?
No, because their design, well, at least not to the planning division's knowledge, the design has always been an extension of the Gray's Inn design. It would be operated by the Bastons, who also operate the Gray's Inn, and they have a, you know, a loyal customer base that, you know, a lot of repeat customers, and their desire was to have a bigger project, and it extends the design of the Gray's Inn.
Do we have a list of the size of the rooms at the Gray's Inn, room size?
I don't have it off the top of my head, but the Bastons
we
are
can,
here, so they probably know.
Okay. Last question. In terms of actual elevation, is this a match with Gray's Inn? The new buildings, in terms of the roof ridge, floor, finished floor, that kind of thing. And maybe that's a question for Gene.
Yeah. Okay. And Mr. Dowdy was the architect on the Gray's Inn project, so he might recall. Yeah.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Commissioners, any other questions? If not, can we welcome the applicant? Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Hello. I'm Tamara Baston. I'm here with my husband, Todd, and, of course, you know Gene. I promise not to read the entire binder.
Oh, good.
And most of the stuff that I've written down here, you have talked about and heard already. But we do own the Gray's Inn, and we're looking forward to expanding our partnership with the city and the development of the lease site that is presently the Morro Bay Paddle Sports. And again, as you know, our plans do include hotel rooms. The retail space on the first floor will support, of course, additional city revenues. The public benefit, which we've discussed a little bit, included the public restrooms, extensions of the Harbor Walk. We really wanted to see the Harbor Walk extend up to the street level, again, to provide this beginning space for people to have access to the Harbor Walk. And as it's extended to the north, that they'd have this wonderful walkway there. And then again, access to the kayak paddle sports, which would be down on the dock and extend from the Harbor Walk. So the gangway would come from the Harbor Walk. We proposed adding bike racks, which at the time seemed something that was very important to the community. And we tried to do as much as possible, talking to Gene, that we could do on that small space. And some of you said you had gone down there and looked at it. It's a beautiful space. It's been there a long time, but it is small living space, even as it extends out to the waterfront. We also have a passion to turn the south end of the Embarcadero into a beautiful and inviting environment instead of a stop and turn around point, which we see all the time happening there. So to provide access to the Harbor Walk, people could walk around in this beautiful circular motion around that area instead of stopping and seeing that, oh, there's nothing else here, let's turn around and go back. And I think that's it for now. Thank you again for your time. As far as the size of the rooms at, they're one-bedroom apartments on the first floor. As far as the square footage, I'm not really sure. Probably Jean could answer that a little bit better. There is a studio space on the top floor, which is more like a studio-size apartment instead of one bedroom. But as far as the size, Jean could probably answer that for you. Is there anything else I can clarify?
One question.
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, you know, when I was walking down there today, I was trying to find the public access, and it was very narrow. I found it. But, you know, I walked down there, I thought it was in private property, and then I realized it's a public access point, but that's very narrow. Would that stay the same, or are you going to expand that?
For right now, that was what was designed when we went through the plans for the Gray's Inn and fitting the mandates for the parking space and all of that. They asked for that viewing corridor and that walkway corridor. For right now, I believe it would stay the same unless there's something else we'd have to change. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to make the other access on the south side to get back to the Harbor Walkway.
Yeah, and the reason
which would provide a bigger space.
And the reason I was asking is because there wasn't very many people there, but it was very narrow, and I can imagine when it is busy, that you're going to have, it's not going to be, you know, wide enough to accommodate the traffic you may have, especially if you develop the other side of it. It's going to be very hard to get in there unless you do something on that south side. So I agree with you that you could maybe do a better job on that and to create a better access to the Harbor Walk.
Right. Okay. And if I might add, having that to go around would also provide an opportunity for the public to go around and see the additional retail space and go around all the way down to the waterfront and then see the have access to the kayaks all the way down to what we have, Beach Burger and all the other retail and restaurant spaces that we have to the north of us too. Instead of,
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Jean, would you want to come up and can ask you a couple questions.
You'll have to.
How much time do you need, Gene?
Oh, I have no idea. It's going to be up to you guys. So here is a 3D modeling program. I have to turn this around this way, I think. Of the project itself, see if I can get this to work here a little bit. I worked with this morning here. That doesn't seem to be it. I don't think this is the same mouse I had earlier. So anyway, there's the project. It's really a small site. It's just really small. And to create any public benefit, it's just really hard to do on the site there. We had tried several different ways to come up with public benefits. One of my concerns on the design of this thing is the hip roofs, and I wish I could figure out how to make this thing work. Say that again? No, that's just if I had created it. If I can get to that one spot right there, and I'm trying to figure out how this mouse works. No, I didn't set those up. Okay, now we're a little better off here. The hip roofs really go back to the aquarium building. When I designed that with Dean and Bertha years ago, he wanted to have some kind of roof that kind of reflected the waterfront. So we came up with a hip roof, and he wanted to put skylights on the top of each one of them so that. And then he thought, if all the projects, all the buildings on the Embarcadero had different hip roofs of different heights, and blues and greens and grays and things like that, and every once in a while there'd be a white cap, that would be like a white cap. So we're just trying to we're trying to think of large-scale design sort of thing here. So on Gray's Inn, of course, we want to reflect what's here at the, with their hip for us here, but we like those really large, I wanted really large hips that would stick out. And what they do, let's see if I can spin this around here. I am working on it here. Is that green line is the horizon. I don't know what that other thing is right there. The green line is the horizon. Oh, I see. We're on the wrong building here. The green line is the horizon. And I wanted to emphasize the horizontal planes when you see the underside of the hip roofs are solid. And that reflects the horizon. If you're doing with out in the mountains, you have inclined planes. But on our design, the main design feature is the horizon. So we want to emphasize that. And then I broke the building up into two different buildings there to break up the mass of the building. And each roof is on a little different elevation. So we're trying to break it up the best we can. Such a small site. It's just really small. As far as public benefits, I realized that we needed to, and it has to do with cost per square footage of the building and getting a return back on your investment. So every square foot is important to get that return on the investment here. And there's going to be a large investment in this project. If you can go to your floor plan you had in the first, I don't know whether you can do that or not. You can go ahead and turn mine off. So we're having so much fun up here. So I was asked to talk to the IT guy. I don't know what IT stands for, but I found out this audiovisual guy. We're having fun, huh? Okay, so if you can go to the second floor. Okay, I am so clever right here. So this is the... This, okay, so that doesn't work. Okay, so the second floor is oh, okay, great, thanks. So it's 19 feet to start with. I mean, so this is 21 feet on the first floor. I brought it back 2 feet to give some offset. If I bring it back another 3 feet, by the time I get, we're on the first floor. I need to get to the second floor. Okay, so it's only 19 feet between here and here. If I bring this back another 3 feet, it only leaves me 7 feet between here and here, hardly enough room for a bed. So it's the square footage that we need to be able to get the cost return on the investment. It's just, yeah. As far as the other additional public benefits, we mentioned the low-cost unit up here in the second floor. If I remember right, and I may be wrong, but low-cost units are required when there are more than four units. We only have three units, so we are providing a low-cost residential unit, so that is a creating benefit.
We understand your argument, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. And then as far as the gazebo around the walkway there, because there was this problem started from years ago to meet that elevation, the only way I can come up with any solution is to extend it around the gazebo and then bring it up, and then the vertical walkway, which requires only 4 feet wide, we're creating it 10 feet wide. So that's an additional public benefit.
Got it. So I have a couple of specific questions.
Sure, go ahead.
So do your finished floors, you know, ridge lines, do they match Gray's Landing? In other words, does this actually match? Does it align? The finished floor.
The second floor finish line? Or the
second floor, does that match with Gray's Landing and the ridge line? How close are they? Do you know?
I think that the one in the front is a 9-foot ceiling height, and Gray's Inn is an 8-foot ceiling height. The one on the west side of Gray's Inn is 8-foot ceiling height, so we try to drop it.
So it'll be a little different.
Yes.
And do you know roughly how many rooms do you have at Gray's Landing?
In existing Gray's Landing?
Yes.
There are three units.
Only three? And do you know the square footages?
No, I don't. No,
okay.
They're just small.
That's something you could get for us. Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Other questions?
Joe.
Yeah, Joe.
With respect to the hotel rooms, I was looking at them, and it seems that I'm in two or perhaps three, or maybe it's just two, you have kitchen accommodations. Mm-hmm. Have you considered hotel rooms designed without kitchen accommodations? Because it's a bit unusual for hotel rooms to have kitchens.
What we found out from Gray's Inn 1, the existing Gray's Inn, is it's a family place where people will go and they'll stay more than just one night. They'll stay maybe a week. And so the kitchen units are part of what you see at Gray's Inn.
I see. Thank you.
Yeah, that is something in Morro Bay's history. I know people like those rooms with kitchens.
For sure. Other questions?
Yeah.
Mike?
Thanks, Gene, for the presentation. You know, I just want to follow up with the gazebo. I asked the person, you know, when I was there, I was wondering why do we want a gazebo, and if we eliminated the gazebo, it would create a better view, overall view, because the gazebo actually blocks the view from the street. So I'm just asking, is there an alternative to the gazebo to create a better view from the street that would basically look into the bay?
Sure, there's always, you can just, you know, eliminate it completely. What I was trying to do was, we have the hip roofs on the mm-hmm. Gray's Inn 1, Gray's Inn 2, and then I thought of the lower hip roof over the gazebo would kind of mimic that. It provides some shelter for our gazebo. And the idea of maybe a charging station that's a public gazebo, something like that, that would be fine. You know, it's the existing storage unit that's on site now. It's been there for, you know, 50, 70 years or something like that. So we eliminate that part of the view shed and we create an open gazebo. Mm-hmm.
And the second question I have was regarding the harbor walk, since those I'm shooting for these public benefits. If that eelgrass study comes in, could you potentially widen the harbor walk from 10 feet to 12 feet or 13 feet or even 15 feet? Especially if it's the beginning, as our chair stated, it'll be the beginning of our harbor walk. You're going to get a lot of traffic on that end and the other end because people seem to go into the harbor walk as soon as they find it. So we create a potential benefit for that purpose.
It could be. I mean, we could go 12 feet. The existing harbor walk in front of existing Gray's Inn and the one next to it, the Beach Burger, they're all 10 feet wide. And so we could stick it out another 2 feet, depending on eelgrass, but it becomes a structural problem as much as anything else.
It was just a potential additional public benefit.
But our ramp is all 8 feet or 10 feet up, and then going up is 10 feet.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Gene. And could you stay available if we have other questions?
Oh,
is
sure.
that okay? Thank you.
Okay.
Really nice to meet you. Thanks. Commissioners, I'd like to go to public comment, mm-hmm. if that's all right with you. I'd like to open public comment. Would anybody like to speak on this project? Do we have any takers? Welcome.
Thank you, Betty Winholtz. It seems to me that we're struggling for public benefits because there are exceptions. And so what if we eliminated the exceptions so you don't have to look for public benefit?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm not understanding why you would not join the two lease sites. It just makes sense because mm-hmm. one's so small. The other one is not up to code because it was built before the city was incorporated or around that time. And if you join them together, then you don't have to look for exceptions. And then it kind of solves all of the problems. You don't have to have more than 10-foot wide walkways. What they're providing are actually small apartments, you heard her say. So they're like vacation rentals. So they're kind of large, like when you think about something that's 400 square feet, isn't that the size of your garage? So those, and then one of them 600. So I don't think you need the height exception. I don't think you need to take public land from the parking areas and give it to them. If you would just put these two lease sites together, we could save some parking. Parking provides the visual off of the bluff, so you're not getting rid of that. So I guess that's what my main idea is, let's get rid of the exceptions, and then we don't have to look for things that benefit. And certainly the gazebo, I think, though it may be beautiful and fit in, it is in the way of the visuals, mm-hmm. As far as I see it. What else? Da-da-da-da-da-da. I think that's so, and I'm just going to say this to clarify for myself. I was thinking there was going to be only one business on this narrow property, but it's actually the front retail as well as the kayak business down below. So we're getting three vacation rentals plus two businesses. I don't know. I guess that's really it.
Mm-hmm.
Is just please put the two leases together. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Anybody else who would like to speak? Chris, do we have anybody in the queue, please?
Currently, we have no raised hands in the queue.
Can I ask a question before we close the public meeting, if you're going to close it?
Question to who?
To the applicant.
To Jean or to Tamara?
Probably to Tamara. Tomorrow, since you know you've got the most vested here, and that's regarding combining the lease sites.
Oh.
Right? Because that's, you ought to address that since it's your proposal. You ought to, why didn't it stick out to us? You know, give it to us. Why weren't we given that as an option to in order to do what Betty said, which is to not have to, you know, make all of the exceptions and not to have to search for benefits? Why don't we combine them?
I think, first of all, it would depend on what the regulations are with combining them. However, at one time, there was that talk of that prior to us completing our RFP, and there were reasons why, for one reason or another, that wasn't an option. And I'm not sure if there were city regulations or harbor regulations at that time, but they just decided to keep them separated. Combining them is an option that we could speak to, again, depending on what your restrictions are and regulations are.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
I think, Mr. Chair.
Eric, what?
I think the reason behind not combining is that suddenly your 30% becomes 24 feet. Which is a significant difference in the current situation.
Let's talk about that in the comments, yeah, and then we can figure out where we might advise, I think. Mm-hmm. We have no more other speakers, so I will keep public comment open so we can ask the applicant questions, mm-hmm. if that's okay with everyone. And, commissioners, this is your chance.
Yeah.
Who wants to start?
Can I start this only because yeah. I think we're kind of stuck a little here, soft, but can you address what we've just been talking about combining the lease sites in order.
So Commissioner Meyer's correct.
Okay.
So the issue that you run into, because the other site doesn't really have is a very small view corridor down the path that you go to the waterfront on, right? If you combine them, you take that non-conforming piece, you add it to the other, you have an 80, I'm going to say it's 50 feet wide, I don't know, but I'm going to say it's 50 feet, you add it to the 30. Commissioner Meyer did the math correctly. That's a 24-foot view corridor you're required, and then now you don't have a project.
Okay.
And if I could offer, that's an important piece of information for us,
mm-hmm.
because, yes, it hurts their project, but that also shows that the view corridor is important because if you look at the project as a whole, the non-conforming nature of Gray's Landing makes the situation worse. So one of the things that I think we might want to consider is an expanded site plan that looks at both projects, doesn't combine them, but at least shows us what the view corridors look like in terms of the whole development, so that we have confidence that if we do this, that it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think to the north, it's built to the lease line, and then to the south, you have that path that you walk down. Have things like 4 foot wide, and then it goes up a little bit, and then a little bit of a walkway along the side of the unit.
Yeah, I'm suggesting that's
not much there is what I'm saying.
Just see it. I mean, in other words, I think for me, that would help my evaluation. I don't know. Mike, other questions?
No, that was
Eric.
Yeah, I brought these books today because I kind of want people to appreciate what Gene does. This is about 2,000 pages right here, and this is our zoning code, our downtown waterfront strategic plan, our waterfront master plan, and the general plan LCP. And between those and all of our comments are where reality lives. And he has to sort of be psychic in a way to figure out what the hell we're going to say, except he's been here about 1,000 years already. Because I talked to Roger Case recently. He's been here 2,000 years. And Roger said he said hi to you. Anyway, This is really complicated stuff because we have to consider the public's point of view, the citizens, and we have to consider the applicants, and they have to work with the city to get the lease site prior to us even saying anything, which is a really awkward situation. It would be super helpful if at some point in the history of Morro Bay, this process changes slightly such that the commission maybe has to preordain these sites with kind of what's allowed and in a more form-based code sort of manner where we structure the sites and what's allowed rather than having a person commit dollars to a project, sign the lease, and then go through this process where we get to beat them up while we're trying to protect the public's interest. It's really a tough one. And the discussion you brought up, Gene, about economics, I know we're not really supposed to talk about that, but with these skinny little sites, this 30-foot wide site, it becomes ridiculous trying to make it all fit. And in that, I wasn't involved, or we weren't involved in negotiating the lease, anticipating what we might or might not have been able to do with the site. It's really, I empathize with you owners or lessors, lessees, whichever it is. It's difficult. For me, I think I agree with many of the comments of the rest of the commission here, where the Harbor Walk and the entrance to the Harbor Walk becomes kind of a priority, I think. And the gazebo or not gazebo, I think if we just eliminate the word gazebo and say some sort of gizmo or gabizo, was it? We need something there at the entrance to the Harbor Walk to identify it for the tourist so they can find it. And I don't know if it's a gazebo or not. There's some discussion there. We'll get to that. The encroachment of the eaves into the 10-foot extension of the lease doesn't really bother me. The 10-foot extension of the lease such that the property can be maximum utilized, there's a discussion there because it's a discrepancy between the public's interest and the interest of the lessee. And I'm not certain how to deal with that. I have empathy for both sides. I can play devil's advocate and fight both sides on this one because I really want to protect the public's interest. It's a really wide intersection there, though. Also, that street is wide relative to some other ones. And I like the little interposing buildings, and I like the little potential walkways going through. I don't necessarily agree that we still have to have that little tiny 7-foot wide or whatever it is walkway between the Gray's Inn and this new thing. But at the same time, the requirements of our laws demand, and if we did merge the lots, then we punish them even further. But if you there's things like you could trade the parking and put the parking on the corner, you know, and instead of having it in front of the Gray's Inn, switch the easterly building. And again, I'm just hypothetically throwing stuff out. Don't freak out over this. But if the building on the new parcel, on the eastern part of the new parcel, were to shift into the parking area of the Gray's Inn, then we might be able to meet the corner. But it's an enormous amount of machination and dollars and cents, and to what end? Kind of at the end of the day, I think it would probably kill the project. It might make it work, but it might be too many moving parts. I'm sort of rambling now, so I'm gonna stop.
good start. Thank you, Eric. Joe.
I endorse everything that Commissioner Myers has said. This is a really difficult situation before us. The only salvation is at this point, all we have to do are make some recommendations, which is essentially tell you what we like about the project and what we don't like quite so much without really having to decide. So I'll try and be as organized as I can here, but this is such a wide-ranging issue. Forgive me if I tend to get lost as well. Okay. With respect to the height, I think history indicates now by right, people can build second stories on the Embarcadero as long as they stay at 17 feet. that view corridor above 17 feet is getting to be particularly a rare commodity over the years as more people build things. And we all know as assets get more rare, they get more valuable. Okay, what does that mean? It means the sort of the compensatory community benefit that will compensate the public for that loss of your quarter above 17 feet, or rather between 17 and 25, has got to be more valuable. I repeat that, more valuable. And to look at that, all you have to look at is our recent decision-making with respect to the Libertine Pub. I'm afraid that, you know, the one small restroom, and I don't see as adequate additional community benefit. The gazebo, as I know a gazebo, obscures corridor, so I don't think that's a particularly valuable community benefit. And then when you couple it with the other exceptions, the exception with respect to the square footage of the second floor, the exception with respect to the setback, and this difficulty with the view corridor, it looks like the requirement of significant adequate community benefits has not been met. Now, the even more difficult issue is this viewship, or view corridor. There's really no need for me to repeat what my opening comment, or rather my opening question was, and the answer that I got, which is when you settle all this, we end up with less view of the harbor and the Pacific Ocean and the Spit, because the applicant is seeking to, rather than fulfill his requirement on this county lot, he's borrowing the 10 feet, which is now open space, and doing that. And it's essentially putting the cost, part of the cost of that development being borne by the public, who enjoys this open corridor space, rather than on the applicant. Nevertheless, it still requires a balancing. It's not simply one or the other. And that's the quandary of this. With respect to here in other applicants, the issue of a reasonable return on investment comes up, and I'm really not going to even address that. In fact, I can't address it because there is nothing in the file that addresses reasonable return on investment other than the actual statement, meaning there is nothing in the file that talks about development cost or operating cost or the approximate rate of appreciation of the property or even what a percentage reasonable return on investment is. It can be 5%, it can be 10%. I remember going to school and typically 20% was considered a reasonable return on profits. Sometimes it's 35, but there's nothing in the file, so I'm not even going to comment on that. It does strike me that not enough attention, I'll back up one second. I think part of the problem is that we're trying to squeeze a really worthwhile, attractive project into a site that really cannot accommodate it. And I'm wondering if the ambition were dialed back a little bit so that perhaps an elevator replaces a stairway and a breezeway is eliminated and the 4 feet to the north of the property is eliminated and I won't say hotel rooms, some of the apartments are reduced in size, perhaps, and probably an intended increase in rental rates if perhaps something can be designed. But right now, it's so ambitious that a part of the cost, a significant part of the cost is being borne by the public at large in this endeavor, because the public at large are the ones that are being sacrificing the view corridor. So I'd like the applicants to rethink that, and I hope that, you know, there might be some sort of a solution in that. And I think that ends my meandering thoughts.
Joe, thank you. Asia.
Yeah, I think that was well said, Joe. Sorry, Commissioner Ingraffia.
That's okay.
There is a lot going on here. I have to agree that the view, because this is or will be the entrance to the Harbor Walk, that it makes it all the more important to the public. I think you're on the right track by providing some kind of public benefit as the entry point to the Harbor Walk. I think it'd be really great to see, maybe instead of a built structure that continues to block the view, maybe some kind of, I would love like a lawn where I could have a picnic. Some kind of entry point, maybe some kind of landscaped area. I don't really know what's possible right there, but something, some kind of softscaping rather than hardscaping as an entry point. But I have to agree with Joe that view going into that is a really important view, and I appreciate the architect's design to have continuity across the buildings. I like the story, the historical story you told about the rooftops and the horizon, but I'm wondering if there's a way to push back the overhangs or the eaves that encroach into the view corridor specifically. There's a way to remedy that. The top floor specifically with the heights, some way to be able to address that so that it preserves that view is really the thing that I'm focusing on. As far as other public benefits, I really appreciate, I know that ADA access is not necessarily a public benefit, but I appreciate that that will become ADA accessible. I like the idea of the showers being an additional public benefit. And I like the idea of an extended Harbor Walk as well. But yeah, at this point, I would have to agree with Joe and see what kind, Commissioner Ingraffia, and see what kind of other solutions we can create for the view corridor.
Asia, thank you, Joe.
I'm so sorry. I left out one thought, and maybe this will be an encouragement to the applicants. You know that street end is, you know, very large, mm-hmm. And while I hopefully absolutely am dedicated to preserving that street end, it's conceivable to me that if the applicants made some compromises in reducing the scale of their structure, perhaps not 10 feet, but perhaps some portion of that could be, you know, part of the plan to contribute to the necessary view corridor, with as usual with special thought giving, so that we don't fall into a trap of establishing a precedent, which we then have to lop off portions of that street to other developments, and soon find ourselves in a place that we don't want to be. But we might be able to design some kind of compromise there.
Commissioners, thank you. Let me give this a try.
Commissioner, before you go, can I go before the chair goes?
One more time.
Yeah, just to hit on some points here. The fact that this is a conceptual review allows us to give the applicant input on what I think we all of us are agreeing on right now. I mean, we're all agreeing to the same thing, so they've heard it regarding the lease site, the view corridor, the Harbor Walk, and the gazebo should be eliminated as part of the Bucor most likely and create something better than that. The encroachment should be allowed in order to get to where we need to get to, of 10 feet. The public access is very important, especially since it'll be the beginning of the harbor. So public access, and then last but not least, public restroom and shower if possible. So I'm just wrapping around with everybody what everybody else said. So I think those things are really important and could create the public benefit to help us make the finding to approve the project if they redesign it, because that's part of our job, redesign and architectural review. So that's what we were doing.
So commissioners, thank you. Thanks. This was very thoughtful. I'm going to make a couple quick suggestions. One is this is a very important site. Mm-hmm. And what I've enjoyed about this hearing is everybody recognizes that, beginning with the applicant and the architect. You understand this not just as the beginning of the Harbor Walk, but Tamara talked about it as the end. It is a destination. What happens when you walk it and you finally get there? That really speaks to the importance of it. Gene, I think his architecture is actually very, very strong. I love the way it aligns with Gray's Landing. I think that's a strong move. I like the double buildings. I think it all makes sense. I think the balance, and we've all talked about this, is we have a public responsibility in terms of what we allow, and that includes getting a balance of community benefit for the variances. And also not just a public responsibility, but it sets a precedent, which we have to think about. When Betty spoke, she talked about why not just reduce the plan, which we almost have to look at that. What happens if you do a plan that actually complies? In other words, meet the maximum second floor area and set it back. I would like to see that, and I'd also like to see that in a plan that shows the existing the original Gray's Landing, so that we can kind of see it as a whole. That, to me, is an option, because not only do you hear us equivocating up here, but this is a project that I would like to see happen. And I take that away from the commissioners, too. I think we'd all like to see it happen. And I think we can get there. The two pieces that I think are missing is we need to see how it fits with Gray's Landing, what it looks like when you start from the minimum, not that we have to stay with that. And you don't have to redraw it. Gene, just give us, like, a line that takes it away, right? And we know you'll be able to figure it out. You know, you'll be able to do something good. But I'm also empathetic that you want a project for your bosses over there that works, that pays for itself. And even though we can't evaluate it that way, we don't want to force you into a bad project. So the next step, if we go this next step, would allow us to look at what it would look like if you did the minimum. And then I think the other thing that the city hasn't done, which is to really address the city's responsibility to what is the beginning of the Harbor Walk, what might that be? Everybody's talked about it. Is it a gazebo? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But also my other concern is the plaza, which is part of the general plan and not your responsibility, but because you're there, I would really love to get the city's response about how we might look at that and what kind of contribution you might be able to do to make that work. So what I'm asking for, commissioners, is a meeting that we would do with two of the commissioners and the staff to look at these pieces, and we can give you more specific advice, I think, that might get us there. The architecture is, I think, strong. I think the ambition is strong. I think the question is what you're asking us to allow. That's the question. And I think we can find a way to get there. So if you're willing to do that next step, and commissioners, if you like that idea or want to tweak it, that would be my proposal. Eric.
I would just like to address something we didn't address, and that's just the replacement of the float and the width of the extension to the south of the water lease. And is the float going to, Mr. Dowdy, this is for you, is the float actually going to increase in size, or is it just open water, the lease site extension?
The existing float will be increased a little bit, maybe 20%.
Okay, to the south?
No, just to the west.
Okay.
To increase the kayak, a little building down through there. The extension of the lease site to the south itself, is there, and historically there's been a boat tied up through there, so we're just trying to generate one more revenue of income to help support this thing here.
Okay.
And then if I can make a few more quick comments. In the original RFP, we had 6 units that projected way out into the street there. We brought that back in, and we presented it back in October, with a reduced area there down to 3 units. We reduced it down one more time, and originally we had 4-foot eaves all the way around. We brought it back down to 2.5 feet.
So, Gene, if you guys agree, if we can go one more round, which I think is reasonable for such an important site,
sure.
I would love to see those proposals as well.
Yeah, and I think the in-lieu fee is a great idea.
Thank you, and thanks for that. I mean, I think we can get there, but I think it's going to take one more step.
Okay.
So, Commissioners, Scott, do you have a weigh-in on that? Are you comfortable with that approach?
With the approach where you just provided direction, I think Gene heard you. So,
Gene would provide additional plans, and the city would provide additional direction relative to the beginning, termination, and plaza.
Yeah, I mean the Harbor Walk thing. I mean, I'll speak to that just right now. I mean that is not the beginning of the Harbor Walk. There's a Harbor Walk that's down, that's south of here, that exists at the what's the site?
Estero
Inn, thank you. So there is an island of Harbor Walk there, and we did redevelopment potentially of the cottages at the end and or Associated Pacific. We would get additional Harbor Walk that would extend all the way down.
All right.
So this is not.
So then it's just the plaza issue.
Yeah. And one of the other things I wanted to bring up, just to add context so everybody understands what it means, if you go single story, the building can be 30 feet wide. So that's that. And maybe we'll talk about this in the next item. But, you know, there's that sort of list that Cindy showed you in her presentation about, like, if it's this wide and this tall, then this is how much your view corridor is.
Right.
There's no view corridor requirement if you're a single story.
Got it.
Okay.
So you're comfortable with that? Gene, are you willing to go another round?
Sure. Will this come back to another conceptual review with the board or just?
No, I think what we should do is meet first, with staff, and 2 of us will volunteer.
Sure.
Whenever you're ready, we'll have a meeting, and then we can address what we heard tonight.
I think that's a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, are you comfortable with that?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's nodding, yeah? It still is. Betty, do you have a word?
I do have a word, and it's just me wanting to be on the record as being as saying that I don't think this project, as far away from the Plaza Inn is, I don't think they should be responsible for participating in that. I don't think anybody should that's down that end. And so that's one thing. And the second thing is, when the Marina Square joined its lots, they made that up. So we haven't done anything for 40 years that joined lots, so I don't know why you can't make that up and put these 2 lots together. That's all. Because I think then you can move the building north and you don't have to get rid of whatever. I'll be quiet.
I got your point. Thanks, Betty. Public hearing is now closed. And I think we've got a resolve. And thank you guys very, very much for the effort.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Would ask to identify the 2 that we'll be reaching out to.
I'm willing to do it. Do we have a volunteer? Eric?
I'm open to you too.
Asia? You want to do it?
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So who was it?
Asia and me.
Okay.
I get to do it. Thanks.
Yeah, that makes
sense. We're going to take a 5-minute break and then come back for our final item.
This will be fun. Thanks for volunteering.
commissioners, if we're ready. Scott, we're on to item C2, which is discussion of second story development along the Embarcadero. You were going to give us a bit of an introduction to this item. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Roshan. So the Planning Commission at the December 19th meeting requested this item come back at the next meeting if possible, so I was able to get it on here. And it's the desire by the Planning Commission was to take a look at the second story development along the waterfront and what policies apply to it, and I think just to have an overall discussion about what that looks like. I'm going to probably bring up a slide here in a minute from Cindy's previous presentation that talks about view corridors and height. I have also a map of the waterfront that identifies all of the two-story buildings there, starting at Beach and then going, to the end of the Embarcadero South. So that should be helpful. So there are numerous policies, and you heard Cindy, refer to these in the previous item that was before you. But we have the city zoning codes, the general plan that apply to all the waterfront development, the waterfront master plan, the downtown and waterfront strategic plan. So you have all these documents that address various aspects of design along the waterfront. They speak to materials, they speak to consistency of materials. All of them do. They speak to focal points along the waterfront, and as well as we have the circulation component of the city's general plan that also speaks to the street ends down there. So there's like anything related to development is covered through multiple city long-term planning documents. I think I'm going to turn this on here for a second and speak to the this is the table that comes out of the city's waterfront master plan. I think it's on page 5-2, and this speaks to height and view corridors. So you see the sort of top item there, and it talks about like if you have a 49-foot width and it's up to 14-foot, then it goes into the third column there, and it says the amount of view corridor you're required to have, and there is no view corridor required. This is the comment that I made at the last item when I said if they keep it single story, they can just build to the edge of the lease site and they don't have to provide a view corridor. It's not really until you start getting into taller buildings and you see the one that's highlighted there, that's directly related to the project that was just in front of you, and it says 49 feet or less, between 17 and 25 feet. You have to have a 30% minimum view corridor, 8-foot minimum. And then it talks about sloping roofs and then a finding of significant public benefit. And you see that last one says, yes, if you want to go to that, you have to have that finding, which is what most of the discussion was about the previous item. Then you get into lease sites that are over 49 feet. Majority of the lease sites down on the waterfront, I think, are 50 foot wide. And so if you're up to 14 foot in height, then it does require a minimum view corridor of 8 feet or 15%, whichever is more. But doesn't require sloping roofs or a finding of significant public benefit. You just kind of scroll down there and to where you see something in the 17 to 25 foot range, 50 foot wide, then the minimum view corridor width is 30% of the lease site. So as you get on the bigger lease sites down there and you want to get to that additional height, you're required to have a much larger and wider view corridor. And I think the reason behind that is sort of evident when you walk along the waterfront and you have areas that don't have good view corridors, or some rather very narrow ones. And certainly the areas, I think, that are wider, the street ends are wider, they feel more inviting, they feel like you should be going into those places. The ones that are narrow don't. So I think that's kind of what this speaks to. I'm going to get out of this. And I'll be going back and forth. Here we go. So this is the.
This is so much fun.
Yeah. This is,
ask Gene for help. Yeah.
Oh.
Superman.
All right, we have a winner.
Superman.
We have a winner. Sorry, it's saw you coming. All right, so what we have here is a map on the waterfront. It really starts at, well, this area of the waterfront starts at beach. They don't start getting to two stories until you get to harbor. So all the ones in orange, as we kind of scroll down along here, are going to be two stories. And so I'm going to scroll down here. With you can see, you know, in here, this is right across from the parking lot that's down on the waterfront there.
So that's Libertine and Roses, right?
Yeah, this is Roses. This is Libertine, Harbor Walk Plaza, Street Hansen's project. And this is the one we were talking about before that has the. That combines the lease sites. That's this one. What's it called? Marina Square, sorry. And then you have several other here that are in a row that are all at two stories. And this is the lease site that was in front of you this evening.
Marina Square is a good example of the diagonal view corridor thing, too.
Yeah, it has the 45 zone. So if they were to do something with the project that you saw earlier, it would have to look something like this. And the issue with the 45-degree thing that we were talking about, it was unclear. It looked like the 45-degree that they had provided out of the street had kind of extended all the way over to the building that was, you know, that was across the street. So it wasn't really providing you that 45-degree, say, from the middle of that street end, which is the kind of question that we had from the staff standpoint.
Yeah, as you said before, the 45 degrees is sort of undefined. I think we need further clarification there.
I agree with you, Commissioner Meyer. And then this is kind of the end of the last two-story building down here, which is the Associated Pacific building. I do have Cindy went today and took some pictures from the street ends. Do you want to see those?
Before you leave this map, can you pull out and like we can see the kind of the pattern of the two-story? Do you go further north, or is that as far as you went?
That's as far as it was.
Okay.
There is the galley and the Anderson Inn north of that, and then there's the copper, what used to be the copper coffee pot. I don't know what
it's
called.
That's the galley and Anderson Inn right at the top.
If we could, we should go ahead and go further north so we can.
It is, but there's already no two-story buildings north of there, is what I was saying.
Oh, okay.
This is the galley. That's Harbor covered.
Super helpful, Scott. Thanks for doing that.
And then we did have, I think the issue with the two stories, and you know, I mean, this is certainly for the commission to discuss because you guys added this to the agenda this evening. But I think it is really like, where do we have views out here? You know, we had the Libertine one, right? There's absolutely views from the top of Centennial Parkway. So reducing that upper footprint improves those views, and I think was a very valid, you know, request from the Planning Commission in relation to that project, and I think made a much better project. A much better project, I think, resulted from that. Now I'm going to turn this. I think I'm going to get out of here. If I can get out of this. There we go. And I'm going to go back to the PowerPoint. Nope, here they are. So Cindy did on her lunch today. I went out and took some pictures for you guys. Out of the street ends, you know, on top of the bluff. So this is from Anchor Street, you know, looking out to the water there. You can see, so the project is, you saw. can see, you know, you have single development here, you have two.
Could you explain a little bit about what is the actual process? Because this is this isn't by right that somebody can add a two-story. It has to be an administrative approval, a planning commission approval. What does it actually take to do that?
That's a good question, Chair Roshan. So all projects along the waterfront come before the planning commission and city council. And because it's in the original jurisdiction of the Coastal Commission, you're also required to go off and get a coastal development permit from the Coastal Commission. We issue a conditional use permit for our permit. So all the permits you see that come before you on the waterfront are CUPs, and the CDPs they get directly from the Coastal Commission. Once they've gone through our process, that goes, that's, and then they go to the Coastal Commission to get that. Previously in our old zoning code, we had the thing where it looped back around, and it would go Planning Commission, City Council, they'd go to the Coastal Commission, and then it would go back to the Planning Commission for the precise plan. We eliminated that last round. Thought process there was, if Coastal makes changes that are significant, we're coming back regardless to get concurrence from Planning Commission and City Council. So
yeah, but no need if they're not substantial.
Yeah, there's no need otherwise. And many times, like more recently, we haven't had real issues with Coastal Commission. They've been on board. We show them the projects ahead of time. We get their input. And so it's rare now that they're making changes to projects when they get in front of them. That was not the case in the past. We didn't really have a great, you know, I would say, working relationship with the Coastal Commission. And so they were always making changes to projects, say, 10 years ago, you know, plus. And so they were regularly coming back with changes and had to go back through the loop. So I understand why it was the way that it was originally, but sort of unnecessary now.
Mr. Chair.
But let me understand what, in other words, how do you make those decisions that, yes, a two-story is okay?
So it really, the code itself says, you know, if you're going, and that was the table that I showed you, it said if you're going to go the 25 feet, you know, it says here's your view corridor, and if you want exceptions, you need to, not only do you need to get the extra public benefit to get the two stories, but if you wanted to get exceptions, you also have to do that. And that's also through the PD overlay that we had originally, and now it would just be through the modifications section of the new zoning code. So different terminology, same process.
So is it ministerial approval? What would you call it?
That's Planning Commission.
It would be Planning Commission based on what the project is offering.
All projects on the waterfront have to go through the public hearing process, which is Planning Commission and City Council.
And my other question is, second floor, we have examples of second floor restaurants. We have examples of second floor retail. But the only thing that really probably works here is second floor hotel.
Yeah, I would say the best example that I'm aware of, and Cindy can add to this as well, would be Rose's Landing. Rose's Landing, from the time I got here about 9.5 years ago until they redeveloped their site, went through like 6 or 7 restaurants upstairs. And a couple of them were very good restaurants. And people knew they were very good restaurants. It's just people didn't know it was there, and they didn't do well.
Well, and I would offer that that's kind of a formula that's across the board, right? Second floor retail is not a good thing, typically, anywhere.
Yep.
Second floor restaurants are questionable. The thing that works is, you know, the accommodations, right?
Yeah, I think all of the, you know, the leaseholders we have along the waterfront, the ones that are redeveloping now, recognize that having rooms upstairs is the successful solution to having something on the waterfront. The city realized it as well in the form that we're supposed to generate revenue to support the harbor functions through the lease sites. It basically, the waterfront operates, and funds itself. Right, and that's one of the issues we have right now. We have a lot of deferred maintenance because it doesn't generate enough money to pay for all the services and maintenance that are required down there. And so while the city is looking at, you know, different options and different ways to achieve, I guess, better solutions on the waterfront, we aren't there yet. But certainly
and office is no longer an option here either, right?
I mean, office space, nobody's...
It's the wrong zone. The zoning is visitor-serving commercial, yeah. So you really can't put that much office up there.
But we used to, right?
No.
Visitor-serving.
You could have something that's related to visitors being here, and you could have that in the buildings. I mean, we've done some of the, you know, sort of fringe stuff in the past, but most of them haven't stayed down there. Those things that were kind of on the edge.
Can I back up a little bit?
Sure.
The thing that I'm trying to understand more about with Morro Bay, and I think that needs more, I don't know what the right word, transparency maybe. When a potential lessee comes in with a proposal on a property and is competing with, let's say, another proposal, there's multiple proposals competing. Those proposals, do they include projections about the new proposed buildings that will be there? Or if the city is looking at person A and their proposal and person B and their proposal, neither of which have been approved through the process yet, what's that look like?
I agree with you, Commissioner Meyer. The process that we go through is a bit clunky. I would say it's better now than it was, better and improving. When I first got here, we used to get sort of like sketches on the back of a napkin, and then they would show that to City Council, and City Council would be like, okay, we'll give you consent, a landowner. So if somebody does this, they come in and they want to do redevelopment of a lease site, we would give them consent, a landowner. That gives them authorization to submit an application to the Planning Division to go through a process to get approvals for a development application. So if you're successful in doing that, you go, like, say you go through the process, kind of like the Harbor Walk Plaza, Shreese Hansen, you know, their project. They had to go get consent of landowner. They went through all of our entire approval process, and then we, as typically what happens is, once you get through Planning Commission and City Council, and you're going off to the Coastal Commission, our Harbor Department will start negotiating a lease with them at that point. And then that lease will eventually make its way back to City Council, and City Council will approve the lease for the site. And then I'll talk about, you know, whether it's percent rents that we're getting out of the thing or what the whole lease process looks like, and it'll be based on the development that they're proposing and that type of thing.
And does this happen prior to the expiration of the previous lease, or does this at the end and there's months in the middle where we're not getting fees?
Sometimes it doesn't. The lease site that you had in front of you this evening, that lease has expired and was kind of in holdover for a while, and then we went out with an RFP. We had two responses to the RFP, and one of them was the Bastons, and one of them was the folks that ran Kayak Horizons. They submitted a proposal, and then they withdrew it. And so we were left with one proposal, and that was the Bastons proposal that you saw this evening.
Joe.
It strikes me so unreasonable to require that the lessee sign a legally binding document and assume the risk that, you know, they can overcome all the exceptions that are required to do what they want to do. I mean, wouldn't it be much more rational for a lessee who's thinking about leasing a piece of property, a conceptual presentation to the Planning Commission, this is what we think you can do and what you can't do, and then they can decide whether they want to be legally bound to a lease? I mean, I was surprised in learning that it's not done that way.
So the consent of landowner is usually for a fixed period of time, a couple of years, and that allows them to go through the process with us. The lease doesn't get, doesn't get executed until they're kind of through the whole approval process.
Okay, so they're not paying the full rate.
We just start negotiating with them when they're done with the city first round, and they go to the Coastal Commission to get their CDP. Then they start negotiating with us, and by us, I mean the Harbor Department.
So has there ever been a process where we've gone through and we said the Embarcadero should be about, you know, retail restaurant downstairs and hospitality upstairs?
That process has not transpired. There's nothing affirmative that's been done on the part of the city to say that.
So there's never been sort of I want to call it almost a consideration or a design about the, I don't know, let's call it the type of character through use of the Embarcadero.
No, they're short of what's in our existing land use documents that are out there that talk about what we want to see down there. And they're all pretty consistent. They pick on different aspects of things, and they've been done over time. So, you know, they kind of read based on the time frame that they were developed in. And then right now, I mean, we're getting ready to, you know, hopefully we're going to get a grant from the Coastal Commission to update the waterfront master plan. I would imagine we're going to be much more particular about what happens on the lease sites as part of that. We're
going
to do a better job of telling that story.
So other questions for staff right now, but what I'm interested in is possibly we come out with some ideas from this discussion. I think the focus could be the master plan. Also, there's talk about us meeting with the Harbor Commission. And that was something that Councilmember Landrum was pushing. And I think that would be a good opportunity to sort of raise the awareness of planning around the Embarcadero and its leasing. That being said, other questions for Scott? I'd like to open it for public comment, and then we can have final comments. No other questions? Public comment? Anybody interested in speaking? If not, commissioners, how do you want to take this? Do you see an opportunity here? Eric, do you want to start?
I guess the way I look at Morro Bay used to be something. You know, a long time ago, it was an art colony. And then in the 40s and 50s, 60s, after the war, it became a fishing village. And at the end of the commercial fishing empires, it's something else. And at this point, the Embarcadero is not clearly defined as to what it is. Is it gift shops and hotels and restaurants? If that's what Morro Bay is now down there, do we want to... What is Morro Bay's waterfront right now? It needs to kind of be sussed out, I think. I'm not certain that it is what it was, but we keep leaning on what it was. But what does it want to be as we go forward?
So take that a step further, sussed out. How do you do that?
Public participation and charrettes.
So a combination of that. So the master plan would be a good place to do it. But identifying it, how do we even frame it as something to be done, which is really looking at, like, I think you're suggesting...
What's the next 100 years for Morro Bay's Embarcadero, you know, it's kind of...
What's the character and the vibe, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the good point behind this is we've done some of the work on this. It's just not entirely baked. That the downtown, the waterfront strategic plan, it tells us the things that we want to see development document. Largely. We also have an economic development strategic plan, which is also an economic document. And it talks about, you know, things that we want to see down there. It talks about opportunity sites. It identifies those sites, kind of like the vacant lot that sits at the bottom of Harbor right there, right? Completely underutilized. And talks about things that you could put there. And it identifies like five things or four things that we could put in that location. We have those things, you know, along the waterfront and in the downtown. So that document started doing some of this, but I think the waterfront master plan update would really flesh out that, I think.
So you would say this makes sense as we begin to focus on what the master plan revisit might be. Mm-hmm. This should be a chunk of it.
I think 100%, because I think this is the way a lot of people in the community feel. I think, you know, they realize that, you know, we had this commercial fishing village concept out here for a while. The commercial, you know, fishing industry has certainly shrunk. We've talked to folks in the commercial fishing industry about, you know, what, and I think we're having new conversations with them now. And even the chamber is kind of out in front of us right now. You know, they're interested in the waterfront master plan update as well, and they've been talking to the folks in the commercial fishing industry about, like, what does this look like for you now? We have the Measure D, you know, there for a while, and it protects the area down there, and they're like, does this really do anything for you now, or are there other things that you need now because things have dramatically shifted since that measure was passed?
So if I was to try to get a sense of what the master plan might tackle, let's call it the second story, but it's really a question of use. Are we looking at hotels, you know, because that would become the predominant second floor use, I think. The second question is, how is the parking? We've had two parking studies done. How is the parking stuff going to integrate with the master plan? Because for me, that has I don't know if you guys agree, it's got a real impact on what the Embarcadero is going to be. How will that happen, do you know?
I mean, it would be part of the, you know, when we, so let's pull way back here a little bit and talk about a little bit about what the master plan and the process looks like, okay? You know, my thought on this, and that's just me thinking right now, like we haven't formed like whatever the committee is going to be that supports this, so things can certainly change. But my idea behind it at this point is, you know, we submit our application to the Coastal Commission. We hopefully get an award that's pretty close to the amount we're asking for. The maximum we can get is $500,000. And then we form a committee of stakeholders, right, because we have a lot of them. And we get the committee together, and then we walk through what our RFP is going to look like. What are the things that we want the master plan to address? What documents do we have out there right now? What are in them? So we don't recreate the wheel. We use what we have, what we like. We realize some of that stuff maybe isn't so good, and we eliminate it, or we have the master plan better address it. But I think that's where we start with, is we get whatever that core committee ends up being, and of stakeholders, and help us form the RFP and what's going to be in it, because that'll sort of frame, you know, the area that the things that the master plan speaks to.
Other thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, I'm willing to bet that the majority of the residents of Morro Bay are less concerned with the kinds of uses on the Embarcadero and more with the appearance of the Embarcadero. And I don't know for certain, but I'm willing to speculate that the 17-foot maximum and the 25-foot maximum are numerous decades old at a time when there was much less in the way of second-story development and maybe even less development on the Embarcadero. And as I said earlier, when that reality becomes more rare, okay, the view and the hindrance of that view should become more expensive. And I don't think we've come to terms with that. I think we're going to see too much of, well, you know, my neighbor two doors down got to build to 25 feet or even to 17 feet. Fortunately, it's 17 feet is less in demand for a whole variety of reasons. But certainly 25, my neighbor got to do it. Why can't I do it? And my response is, okay, there's a cost in going to 25 feet. And that cost is enormously more expensive now than it was 20 years ago or 50 years, okay? We need to reevaluate what the price tag is on additional community benefits. And if we do that correctly, the market will take care of what can be, the market will take care so that we don't lose.
So to illustrate your point, could you put your map with the orange two-story buildings?
Yes, yeah, I'd like to know, what did that look like 20 years ago? Were there half as many?
When I was a little kid, the Embarcadero was fishermen. There was a couple of fish and chips places. You know, there'd be a little shack, a little shed roof shack, yeah, off the side of the, and then a lot of rocks and kids fishing for perch. And then, you know, a little launch going down to four or five boats on a little floating dock. And then another little one, you know, 100 feet up, and then on the Embarcadero SF is boatyards. There's four boatyards, you know, where you could haul out, and you know, there's really nowhere to haul out anymore, I don't think. And is there one left? One, yeah.
I mean, what if there was some way to do an economic calculation, and you'd say, okay, here's a 60-foot wide lot that has a one-story building on it. Okay, so that view space from 10 feet to 25, 15 feet of view space across a 60-foot lot, is that worth $100,000? Is it worth $300,000? Is it worth $500,000? And that becomes a number that you start tossing around in terms of thinking, what should that developer pay for that?
Or should it even be for sale?
I would suggest it's
not for sale.
All right.
Because I mean, you can go to certain parts of Europe, and there's five stores on the beach, and it's pointless. The beach is kind of a pointless experience.
Not for sale could mean simply we've decided it's so expensive that you can't afford it.
Yeah,
that would accomplish.
Asia, did you have a?
Well, I was just going to say the city already by funding the harbor via these leases, they've decided it's for sale. If that's the funding mechanism.
I mean, we're actually required to, you know, like operate them to make a profit basically through the Tidelands Trust. But so there is a component that that Commissioner King brings up that is that, but it, we get to determine like what things are.
What that looks like, yeah.
I think the kind of what Joe's seen in my, what I think I'm hearing from you is that there is a process and there is a certain amount of, a lot of effort has gone into where we are right now, and to try to step out beyond where we are right now is what you're talking about. And I, maybe what you're saying is we shouldn't be going beyond. We should be trying our best to keep it at least in check rather than expanding. We should just keep it in check to what it is currently.
Or at least let's not sell it at a bargain. Let's not sell it at such a price that it's so attractive for people who might not otherwise do it if they had to pay the true economic value.
So let me...
If they had to pay the true...
If they had to pay the true economic value of their proposed project, which I do not believe they're doing right now.
So let me add another thing to consider. When you look at the map, there's two ways to experience the bay, and the spectacular one is the Harbor Walk. And that's a big effort. Like, how do we make the Harbor Walk continuous? I think it's like the best kept secret on the coast. You know, it took me forever to discover that the Harbor Walk really, you know, there was a lot of it. And I enjoyed the discovery. But so I think there's ways we can enhance the Harbor Walk. But the second thing is what it's like just going down Embarcadero. And that's both in a car and walking. And when you're, say, in Monterey, sometimes you don't even know you're on the bay, because it's so overbuilt, right? And the buildings are so consistent. A sense of the water is hard to get. Here, there's two ways to do. One is to keep it, I think, one-story buildings, but the other is the way that the gaps in between the buildings open up to the water. And there's probably a rhythm there, right, Eric? I mean, I'm looking at that. I don't see it exactly. But it's still a kind of a thing where, from a planning perspective, not only do I think that it changes the vibe, all the two-story, but I think even bigger is you don't want to lose that awareness of the bay.
The way I would phrase that is that we have a lot of good soldiers down there on the waterfront architecturally. We have no heroes, but we have these some big good soldiers that probably should be heroes, but they weren't done well enough to be a hero. I mean, in the old days, Jim Maul built this.
Don't we have a couple of heroes, though?
Kind of a hero, but it's not what it used to be. Let's put it that way.
But the Garden Center and then
the Garden Gallery is definitely a hero. We could use a little bit. If we're going to go big, it better be damn good. Is all I'm trying to say.
So let's talk about that for a moment. Is there a way that we start to really talk about the quality of the architecture? Right now, we've sort of worked with projects to keep it actually the opposite of going, attempting to be a hero that it's not, which, you know, I think in our minds is worse than, you know, it's worse to you know, get a painted pig than it is a, you know, than a simple piece of architecture. Do we want to even consider that idea of raising the bar?
It's such a subjective decision.
Totally.
It takes a level of expertise on commissions like this, that within a community this size, you know, it's not a very big community, and so it comes down to the people, is all I could say there. And it's tough for people to agree on what is quality.
So I guess my question is that even a consideration, the idea of upping our architectural game? I mean, certain communities do that.
They do. Within the documents, there is a lot of discussion about opportunity sites and what might happen on those opportunity sites. Absolutely should be raised to a higher level. The balance of the buildings, what I'll call the good soldiers, it's quite tricky to get. It's expensive too for the applicants and so forth to get to the quality level.
And I'll mention my frequent example of Italian seaside and hill towns. people don't go to them to see the heroic architecture, yet they're delightful to visit.
Well, that's because they've got real vernacular, right?
Oh, well, I don't know what that means, but
test, yeah.
But it's not about the eye, in my terms, the eye-catching, spectacular.
So when I speak to that, I don't necessarily mean that we want IMP or somebody to come and design a building. I just mean that we want someone to choose, you know, the right materials. And if we want a warehouse, we want it to be made out of old redwood that's reclaimed. Yeah. We want it to have, you know, bronze fixtures. We want it to have the right stuff. It's not hardy plank and galvanized, or maybe galvanized is actually okay, but it's not, you know what I'm saying? It's the quality of the materials. It's not necessarily the quality. It's, plus, architecture is awesome, but it doesn't have to be.
Aisha?
I was thinking two separate things. One is, you know, since I've been on the commission, the sites for redevelopment that we've seen come in are local existing business owners, which I really appreciate. You know, we see a lot of other hotels or sites in town being developed by people that aren't necessarily living in the community, and so I appreciate that whatever we've done in this process has allowed, instead of for corporate development, has allowed for local business sustainability. And so whatever direction we go, I like that. That's part of what I think is the champion of Morro Bay. The other thing was, thinking about design and look at architecture. There's so many small tourist towns. I'm thinking about Nevada City, some of my favorites, port towns in Washington, you know, some of the seaside towns on the coast of Oregon. These are towns that have design-like districts, or they have a historic district that determines what things look like in within a specific area. And I don't know if that's what we're talking about here, but it seems like there's ways that we could learn from some of these other places how they have maintained or encouraged the look and feel.
They're more strict, like Carmel, definitely, for instance, much more strict guidelines, and ours are
very specific,
are looser.
But I would be curious to look at some of successes, I guess.
Well, and if I could just offer, in a way, I think our strength is not being strict. That's why this is a little, I mean, it's a little, it's a hard solve. And yet, I love the, let's call it the easy quality, the intimacy of Morro Bay. Like, I don't feel that in Carmel, you know? I mean, it's probably not where I want to go. Yeah, or can a friend.
There's a word a friend of mine and I use, and that word is skitchy wumpusness. There's a certain skitchy wumpusness to some of the historic old Morro Bay that it's endearing.
So, commissioners, it's 8:30. Can we go around and each kind of do a summation about where we want to wrap this up? And I'm going to start with Scott, that you can help us focus. What would help you?
I'm gonna ask a couple of questions here, because I really actually like what Commissioner Groffi was talking about early on, because I think it brings to the forefront some things that, you'll like this, have unintended consequences.
You're talking about the economic formula?
No, I'm talking about the idea, you know, that we should be paying for the second story. Like there should be more public benefit. I don't disagree with that. I'm just, underneath the current policies that we have, and you heard me mention this previously, is if you have a single-story building, you can build to the edge of the lease site under the current policies. I understand why it's that way, because you're not having the height now, so you're going to get some, because the lease sites aren't big, so you get to extend to the side. But I would argue that that's probably one of the bigger impacts that we have on the waterfront. Like, when I walk down there, the things I like are the openings between the developments and the buildings. Mm-hmm. And I also like, if you're at Centennial Stair, I like to be able to look down and see the street in and out to the water. I think those are fantastic views. I have less I'm less attached to the ones that are mid-block, and, you know, I mean, the only thing this two-story building is going to block is a view potentially of a portion of the bay from a house. You know, the private view, you know, protection thing isn't really my thing, and I didn't hear any of you speaking to that, although I think Chair Roshan did bring up the feel walking down the Embarcadero and what that's like and to see the views in between it. So I just wanted to provide some context there about, again, unintended consequences. If we went all, if we said, oh, we're not going to have two-story buildings, the policies that we have right now might create things that you don't want.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah,
yeah, and then I would say that the last thing I'll say about it is all of the outreach that we've done since I've been here, and we've done a lot because almost from the moment I got here, we started doing the economic development strategic plan, the downtown and waterfront strategic plan, the zoning code update, all of those documents, the general plan update, and all of the community input was we ask them, what do you think these areas look like downtown, the waterfront? And everybody came out and was like, it's funky, it's weird, it's eclectic.
Right.
And they liked it. So, you know, when you think about what you want and what it feels like down there, you know, those are the comments back, you know, when we received them that we got. Mm-hmm. People like that kind of eclectic nature, mm-hmm. and probably aren't super interested in the city going down the road of Avila Beach,
mm-hmm.
As an example, where they sort of, once they rebuilt the town, they kind of rebuilt it all the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and our guidelines support that right now.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. They do. So I'm going to suggest that we go around the table, we make an offering, and again, I want to start with Scott to see what he thinks we can do. I'm thinking we come up with a kind of a document that's maybe tries to hit the key points that we might want to continue to explore and develop. I'm also going to suggest 2 years ago I did a walk with you and Cindy, and it was really, really great to walk. We walked the whole Embarcadero. And we just talked about it, what we saw, what worked, what didn't work. And I think we could do that with the commission. Mm-hmm. Do a walk where you guys, you know.
If we do it with the whole commission, it has to be noticed.
Mm-hmm. And that we can do that.
And then we can do that. So yeah. That's the only point that I wanted to make, is that if we do it with the whole commission, then it's an open public meeting and anybody can do it.
And can I suggest something at this point?
Sure,
because it was recommended that we meet with the Harbor Commission anyway.
That's
why don't we just do it all together? Notice it, Planning Commission, Harbor, we're going to walk it first, come back here and have a meeting or something like that, right? Let's kill two birds with one stone.
Well,
because we're going to want their input on what they see. Remember, they're different. The Harbor.
I think we need to get our ducks in a row here from the Planning Commission and kind of get a feel for what we're even like stressing or pushing.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, if we take this document, walk it together, step three would be the meeting with the Harbor Commission.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking.
Yeah, and the one question I did have for Scott, because then I'm done, you know, then you can go to the other commissioners, is the waterfront master plan. You know, when is it anticipated that we'll start that process again? You know, and you know, go out for funding and blah blah blah. You know, when do we start
that? We're in the process of putting the application together. As soon as we're done with it, we're gonna send our draft into the Coastal Commission to review it with their staff because they suggested we do that.
Yeah.
I would imagine that'll probably take a week or two to kind of.
So, if we were to press for deadlines, you think the application is 2 weeks out?
I think we're probably a week out.
Okay.
And
then how long does it take roughly to?
And then then our conversation will probably take about 2 weeks with them, at which point we would turn back around and submit it, and their response to us on the grant is due within 30 days.
Hmm. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
As soon as we had that, we would be going back to City Council and saying, hey, here's a potential framework of folks we would want to have involved in this, and get concurrence from them to go form whatever that support committee is.
So this work that we're doing tonight and what we're leading up to is a preparation for that.
That's right.
To prepare us. It's also to make us articulate. And we don't want to have this meeting in front of the Coastal Commission where we're like, you know, batting the ball around, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's your recommendation, Scott?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Joe, these are our final comments, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a document that would alert the decision makers to our concern, which is that the constraints associated with single-story construction, 17-foot construction and 25-foot construction were made at a time when the asset that they obscured, the view, was plentiful. Now that it's no longer plentiful, you need to reevaluate those laws and the cost that those laws are exacting.
And so, just let me get real clear. This is a way to look at the second story that, and it could happen different ways. Like one of the options was these opportunity sites, where there might be sites where, you know, we're more concerned about what happens there. And it could be about the rhythm of the two-story. It could be about other things. But that's how you would begin to evaluate.
Yes, but let's begin the evaluation process so that we don't simply say, single-story, you get to build it, 17 pretty much by your right, 25, well, it's an undetermined.
Scott, does that make sense?
I understand that. I understand the concept.
And by cost, you don't just mean dollars. You mean overall cost, public loss of
use, yes,
cost of.
Yes, that's what I mean, but it, for purposes of doing something meaningful, we might have to translate that community asset loss into dollars and cents, something that we can operate with. Yeah.
So to my, okay, I'll
got it.
Make my comments later.
Got it. Asia, final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Joe's saying. I would like more time to think about this, to add substantial comment, to be honest. It'd be great to do like a policy review of what do we have now? What are, like Scott was saying, potential consequences of changing that, and what are some options moving forward?
So we can continue to add to this. So this final thoughts for tonight.
Totally.
But I do think reaching out, Scott, like, thanks for doing this map. I think the other thing that would maybe help is to look at, I don't know, the plaza idea that we're talking about. Like, one of the, let me add this real quick. One of the things that the parking studies say is the land is way too valuable on the Embarcadero side to let it happen with just parking. And how do we begin to study and look at that and see what that means? The obvious thing is public space, which is what we're trying to do at Libertine, is what Libertine has offered. But I'm thinking this map, again, the idea of a rhythm along the Embarcadero, maybe you add the plazas and maybe there's a pink line that somehow looks like, you know, where the continuation of the Harbor Walk is, something like that. Other things, Asia, that would, like, you're like saying preparation work, right?
Yeah, like Scott brought up past community engagements. Like, what do we have in place that have gotten us here?
So you're thinking
like a policy assessment, essentially. Like, where are the gaps? What do we need to? What needs to be addressed concretely? Like, how can we address these?
So a policy sheet that sort of shows steps.
Well.
No.
My take is, so what often happens when you go through, all of our work on land use documents, there are background technical reports that looked at what the city had in place. I think that's probably what Commissioner King's talking about. I mean, is to evaluate what are the things that we have, what are the policies that we have that apply down here, so you can see them. In one place, because they're not in one place right now. They're, you know, as in the staff report that I provided you, they're in multiple locations. So is that what you were thinking? Or
yeah, exactly. And, like, if we're looking at basically, like, what are the mechanisms that have gotten us here, and if we're looking at doing something different, like, what are the mechanisms we can use to do something different? I'm interested in what are the, like, policy levers we can use here. Maybe that's okay.
I like the approach. Okay. I'm not sure.
So, as it stands right now, we have zero capacity to do that.
Totally.
Commissioner King, this is exactly the opening document that the consultant will put together, because you can't go anywhere if you don't know where you've been. So
rather than doing a lot of work, because what we just ask is kind of just having somebody in staff overlay stuff for the map. It's not a lot of work. Is there a way that we can just sort of get lists of policy documents that begin to suggest trends? Or I'm thinking about something super simple.
To do it, you have to go, you know, the lift is reading through all the documents. They're hundreds of pages long.
Yeah.
And that's why I say, like, at the time right now, we are, to do it well, you have to go through and look at all of it. And
good idea.
We're in the process.
That's how I do things, you guys. Come on. No, I'm happy to do some of the lifts.
You could read, yeah.
Doing that.
2,000 pages.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I do all day, every day.
The Waterfront Master Plan does talk extensively about these things.
I guess what the ask is maybe you could help me identify where to look so that I could begin to look into that more.
I mean, you're on to something. I just don't know how you do it. I mean, I like what you're suggesting a lot. So,
the Waterfront Master Plan is 28 years old,
Well, that's why we're doing another
downtown strategic water. The Waterfront's downtown strategic plan is relatively recent. It's like 6 years old.
Right.
But
Eric, do you have final thoughts?
I like much of what's in these. I like the general demeanor of especially the more recent document. It has a lot of great ideas in it, and it's just not specific enough for me. It could be more specific, a little bit less general. I do think that the connection between the downtown and the Embarcadero, that intersection, whatever happens there, is more important than any of us can realize, because the deadest part of town is that T intersection, except for Dorn's. The rest of its motels also are okay, but there's just a lot of empty lots and a lot of bad retail, right? Not bad, just not as high of use as it could be. That connection for me is probably the most important connection in town.
Say it in one sentence.
Connecting the downtown to the Embarcadero.
All right.
Is important as part of this process.
Big time. Mike?
The only thing I'm going to add is, because I know Scott, his staff, his time is zeroed out, but maybe as well we could do this walk, if we're going to do a walk prior to our planning commission meeting the same day, so we don't have to notice to, you know, do our regular meeting, but we're going to meet early to do the walk and then come back and meet on a regular planning commission day.
Yeah, sure? But we'll have to wait until the summer when the sun's up so we can see what's going on.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Let's combine, and it'll be early because it's...
Yeah, we could do a special meeting followed by the regular meeting.
Yes. That way we don't have to give them...
I like that,
that's
Mike.
It.
Yeah.
That's it for me.
I'm going to add one, which is even more confusing.
Yeah.
I'm saying somehow identify and recognizing what we have in the Embarcadero. So that's recognizing the walk...
Mm-hmm.
Like an inventory, but a picture.
Yeah.
So, because I think right now, believe it or not, I'm not even sure everybody knows that lives here knows what it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. And so when I say a picture of it or a figure,
mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure what I'm saying, but I think it is about inventory and pieces. Mm-hmm. It is about the harbor walk. It is about the pedestrian walk. It is about the drive. And it is about how the fabric of those buildings works together as an edge.
Yeah. And I found a new public access today that I never knew existed.
Good.
That's the inventory.
So Gene has hung in there with us. Is it okay, commissioners, if he has the last word?
Are we doing public comment?
Thank you for letting me speak.
Well, we already asked, so this is still public comment.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, good.
Thank you for letting me speak. We don't know what it's going to look like in the next 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume that the wind farm and the battery storage may play a pretty important role in this thing. Remember how it was for the commercial fishing village? I'm not too excited about it being a tourist trap. Tourism destroys the culture and heritage of an area. But when you take your walk, remember there are two sides to the Embarcadero. There's the water side, and you guys need to take a view from the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Take the harbor department boat and go for a view that way, because that's the view that a lot of people get to see. Thank you.
Okay. This might be 2 days. Yeah.
Gene makes a very good point. Yeah. Looking at the waterfront from the water gives you an entirely different perspective if you haven't done much of that. It is,
Well, I do a lot of kayaking, so yes, I couldn't agree more. But to do it together would be fun.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great.
So thank you, Gene. So let's see. Let's go through the rest of our agenda real quick. I lost mine. Any unfinished business, commissioners? Hearing none.
Unfinished business.
Go ahead.
I did meet with Sean today. I know Joe's on board with getting our public benefits committee. Every meeting we're having another, public benefits round, and we ought to get this on the agenda ASAP.
Let's find a way to complete that.
Okay. Yeah, Sean.
Afterwards, and we'll attend.
I wanted to try, but we're drowning right
now. Okay. Whenever you're able to.
Yeah. We should be better. We're in the process of hiring another person.
So okay. Good. I just thought I'd bring it up for the record. We're continuing to try.
Planning Commission. Oh.
I have a comment slash announcement. I was thinking, talking to Joe, maybe we should restart the book club if anyone's interested. Yeah. I know that Mike had a book that I really wanted to read.
Oh, yeah.
But so maybe we'll.
The Good Ancestor.
The Good Ancestor.
Right. Yeah. I'm onto it, yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to be ancestors. So we need
Asia, that's going to be at your initiation, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for doing that. I'll coalesce. Thank you. Other commissioner comments, future agenda items? Hearing none. Community Development Director, do you have comments?
I don't have anything else to add. Thank you.
And thank you for the help on this and kind of getting us there. I'm thinking this is important that we prepare for the meeting with the Harbor Commission. So not only that we come off credible, but we actually have a strategy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you all very much.
Yes.